once again, golf friends, STDs, people that love the swing thoughts, welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Golf Spiritual Leader. That's me. If you don't know why, look it up. Although, I'm going to tell you a story today that will once again cement my status as somebody that has transcended the nonsense. Along with one of the finest golf people I know, one of the finest people I know, one of the great humans that has been baked and put on this planet, Coach Timothy O'Connor. Welcome, Coach
Tim. Well, thank you for that lovely introduction, but I think I'm just as messy and flawed as the rest of us.
Although yeah.
You have ascended beyond our plane. So
that's right. I'm on a different plane. I like to come visit with you once a week. And have the and commune over this game that we love so much. At the very end of the Humble and Fred show, which I just finished recording, I was talking about a little golf clinic that I'm involved with from one of my clients' customers or clients. One of my clients' clients. That's right. And I said, I'm looking forward to this clinic Friday because I'm going to be helping him do a little teaching. And I said, you know, I realized recently one of the things, because I know you've been involved in now coaching people, not just on the mental side of the game, but helping them with their golf swings. And I said, one of the reasons I like teaching people to golf or helping people with their golf swings is because I like the game so much that I just want other people to like it too. And I wonder, is that what it feels like for you?
Oh, well, I think that a lot of it is just, I think there's so much that you can learn from this game and just enjoy. And a lot of it, it's opening people up to like, you know what? This isn't all like this grim exercise in trying to get the ball airborne and stop hitting it, you know, into the farmer's field. It's actually, there's a lot of fun to be had. And so, yeah, I love that. And I love it when people sort of go, holy crap, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And they're accessing another part of themselves. So, yeah, I mean, I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I had this, no, I was talking about this with my brother this winter because I had several people that I was helping with their golf swings, beside my brother and some people in Mexico and some buddies of mine sending me videos of their swings. And I had this sort of epiphany, like, am I doing this just to feed my own ego, which, you know, I do. But I realize that I like talking about golf, whether it's with you. I love talking about it with you or with somebody that's interested in it. And over my 50 plus years of doing this, as we both have, I've acquired a bunch of little tricks, little secrets, little magic tricks, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you show somebody, I like passing those on.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what it is for me. And I wish you know, I had done with what you're doing. I wish I'd set up a situation where I could do it formally, but I actually like doing it informally. When somebody I'm playing with, I notice they're doing something, I'll say, hey, listen, you know, I got a little trick about that. And then I give it to them. And then, you know, it's like passing on a secret.
Yeah, it's just fun to see people go, wow, I'm not as effed up as I thought I was. I'm actually pretty capable, you know, and they can have some fun. It's opening people up to new possibilities, I think. But just on the quick note about coaching, I don't care who you are as a coach or a teacher or whatever you do or leader, you're always going to have a moment where, oh, am I as good at this as I really think I am? Or, geez, and talking and maybe hearing, you know, I'll hear myself talk too much. And I go, wait a sec, this isn't about me. It's about the person. It's always realizing we're here to help that person. And that always guides me. And so it's, every once in a while, I make it about me, and I go, oh, wait a sec, stop talking. I heard a great acronym. It's called WAIT. Why am I talking?
Mm. Yeah, I should. I don't know. I mean, I'm a volume dealer for sure. I definitely deal in volumes. We want to thank so this is the opening of the show, and as often we do, let's talk about the fine people that support our program, like these folks.
Every driver has an inertia number. The higher the number, the more forgiving the driver. Now, golf is about to discover the first ever driver that combines tailor-made speed with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. The all-new QI10. More forgiveness means more long, straight drives, even on off-center strikes. The days of missing the fairway are numbered. Get ready to experience your drives in 10K with the all-new QI10. Only from TaylorMade. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca.
Yeah, more and more you see the players on tour that are TaylorMade people. Scottie Scheffler. We should put aside a couple seconds for him today. Rory McIlroy, Nelly Korda, some of the Canadian guys using the QI10 technology. I can tell you not only the driver, but the three-wood that I have, it's QI10, is so good and so forgiving. What else, Tim? Who else helps us with this program each and every time we do it?
Well, let me get into it this way. Next week, GSL and I are once again going to be competing in the Saugeen Seniors Invitational, and we will be resplendent, festooned in our Oscar Bravo polos. Humble, don't wear the one with the mustard stain, please.
I don't. Wait a second. That's all I have are ones with mustard stains. Although I don't. Here's what I'm going to say. Please finish up, and then I have a proposition for you.
No, we will. We will no doubt be the only ones who are wearing these fine polos made of incredible Italian fabric, and because they only make 100 of them a year, and they look amazing, they feel amazing. And if you want to know more, check out whoisoscarbravo.com.
Yeah, to be clear, they make 100 of each style. Now, to that point, yeah. I've been in some two-man competitions lately where the two guys playing wear the same outfits. And I can't do that. But
no, I'm not doing
so
that.
So we'll just have to coordinate. We'll both be in the OBs, in the OB polos, but we'll be in different ones. Okay?
No, fair? I don't like that the team shirt thing.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, I don't know, you know, the Home Depot team in a scramble.
That's right.
You know, it's like, nah, I'm not doing that.
Okay, so that's our annual competition that we play together is coming up next week. I'm going to talk about this for some scheduling stuff, because this last week we had to miss a show because I screwed up my computer, and we're going to have to finagle some. We might have to miss another show because next week a lot of competition, including our two-man thing, but I've also got a qualifier. I've got a Senior Ryder Cup thing. I've got the National Invitational. I've got a lot of stuff going on. Anyway, all of this to say, I have, later in this program, for you and our friends, what I think is one of the most season of balance-y things that I've done, and I think you're going to be very intrigued by this story. And if I may say, I think you're going to be very proud of your younger friend, GSL, because I did something that I took action on the season of balance. And I'll tell you what that story is later. I want to read something to everybody. You know, we've had this gentleman on our show many times over the years. And one of the things that bonded Tim and I back 10 years ago was our mutual admiration of Fred Shoemaker. And as many people know, Tim has written a book called Seven Great Slow Cook Recipes for Golf. Seven Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds is the actual title. Am I right?
Yes, 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 you are.
And what an author does is he sends out copies and people look at it. I've had a look at it, and the people that he, you know, wants their opinion. And I was flattered you asked me, but you also asked some real people. You asked some people like Carl Morris and some people like Fred Shoemaker. And Tim recently shared with me what Fred wrote about Tim's book. Is it too embarrassing? Would you like, is it okay if I read this?
No, I'd love to hear it. Love to hear someone else voice it, if you will, because I certainly voiced it.
Well, I'll tell you, dude, it's pretty flattering, but it's also true. Fred Shoemaker, This guy knows what he's talking about. He says most books about sports, about a sport, give out information. They increase the sum of what we know. Tim O'Connor's new book provides the possibility of transformation, a shift in what we believe and how we view our world. Instead of another formula or method, this book offers experiences and wisdom that can reshape your entire golfing experience. Let's just say that again. It's not about increasing information. It's about a transformational shift. And this is from Fred Shoemaker.
Well, you would know. You're the GSL.
Exactly. Tim.
You've been there.
Oh, there's more, says Fred. When you first read this, tell me that didn't give you some kind of writer boner. I mean, come on.
Yeah, writer boner would be. Yeah, that is right in the territory.
Come on. I mean, I'm reading it now and I'm getting a warm one. He goes on to say, Tim, through his own authenticity and vulnerability, shows that when you get through the blocks and blind spots, what emerges on the other side is an independent, resourceful, confident golfer. And he finishes, this is Fred Shoemaker, by the way. He finishes by saying, I see the book as a heartfelt intervention in what is almost a certain future for those of us who play the game. That is crazy good, man. Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, I...
How does that make you feel?
Over the moon. I mean, it's really nice to know that the, you know, doing the work, immersing myself in the book, you know, this is like, whenever you create something, whether you come on stage and you're going to do your stand-up comic thing, or just you and Fred go live, or you put, you know, a blog or a book out there, you're taking a risk. You're putting yourself out there. And so I'd worked on this, and this is like a culmination of decades of stuff. And I put it out there to your, Fred's a mentor and a coach to me. He's one of the guys I really look up to, Fred. There's no one who's had a greater influence on me in terms of my approach to golf, and I would say a lot of my approach to life, than Fred. So to get that, wow, that was really, really made me feel really good. And did I tell you about the phone call with Fred?
I think you did, but I'm 64. I mean, I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or.
Anyways, yeah, I can't. I'll just try and do it briefly because it's a similar thing to getting that in that email that you just read. So a couple weeks ago, I'm playing in a fundraising tournament. And it's dinner's starting to wind up, and my phone ring, and it's Fred Shoemaker. Wow, Fred Shoemaker calling me. And, you know, this has never happened. And I said, Fred, I'll call you back in 10 minutes because we're just saying goodbyes. And so in that intervening 10 minutes, I'm going, oh, God, you know, I wonder, you know, he's probably going to say, well, Tim, you know, I kind of like what you tried here, but this part where you quoted me, that's not quite right. Mm-hmm. You exaggerated that part. That part there you put in, can you please take that out? You know, or this is misrepresented what I really meant, et cetera. So I got all this stuff going on in my head, go in my car, phone Fred, and he just tells me how much he loved the book. And, you know, what he just said a lot about that. A lot of books are information, and he said he doesn't read those books, but part of what he liked about my book is that I've lived it, and I'll just hold it there, but that, man, so nice to get that kind of feedback, really. Yeah. But there will be, you know, when this thing goes out on Amazon, there's going to be reviews that are going to just dash it.
And well, you don't know that,
but it'll happen. I mean, that's just the way the world works.
Human nature is, you know, but it's interesting. But
so we'll just
no, but you know, listen, dude, I have a Facebook feed. Every morning our show is live. You know, our show gets downloaded after, you know, we produce a show from 7:30 to 9:30 weekdays, and most of the people that listen to the Humble and Fred Show do it by downloading it. But there's a group of people that watch us live. And the things, like, not everybody likes us. Trust me. This morning, there was a couple people on there, and our producer blocked them. Because as he said after the show, he goes, you know, life's tough enough. We don't need people that hate us. And we really don't. But they said some horrible things about us. And it just kind of goes with the territory. But putting that aside, it isn't an interesting to me that your reaction when Fred called you was, oh, it's going to be something negative.
Yep. I went there.
But it's sort of, I was going to say, that's the human nature part. We think, oh, you know, somebody's calling us that doesn't normally call us. It's probably going to be like something negative. But as he, and so let's leave that aside. As he says here, which I thought is fantastic, most sports books give out information. Tim's book provides the possibility of transformation. And, you know, that's a pretty heavy thing from coming from a guy who was, for me, along with Rotella's book, Golf is Not a Game of Perfect, that I stumbled upon in 1995. As far as books that transformed me, there's that. And then Shoemaker's first book that I read, which is
Extraordinary Golf.
Extraordinary Golf. That was part of a whole bunch of books that I kind of consumed in that first couple of years, where I realized that I needed to find some other way to be, or I was going to punch myself repeatedly in the face. But it was among those books, and it was one, and that was one of the things that you and I bonded over back years ago when you were interviewing me the first time, not to be confused with this time. Where we talked about books that, you know, made a big impact on us. So I can imagine if I were a writer like your own self, hearing that from Fred Shoemaker has got to be amazing for you. So let's just, you know, let's dwell on that.
No, absolutely. I was over the moon about it. And it makes me, you know, like the books at the designers right now. You know, I did all my bit in terms of getting it ready. And it just takes time. Yeah, I would have loved to have been out earlier for this golf season, but it is what it is, as they say. And, you know, it's working its way towards getting out. And so I am really excited about it. It'll be interesting to see how it's received. And, but, the, you know, getting acknowledgement like that from people like Carl, Fred, yourself, some other folks, George Durrani, our friend from the Mankind Project, he read it, he liked it. So, and that's interesting. I just staffed a new Warrior Training Adventure weekend run by the Mankind Project this past weekend. And I realized how much of my experience in that organization, facilitating men, learning about things like shadow, the stories we tell ourselves, how much is in that book. It was really interesting.
Well, that's why it's transformational. Along with some snappy recipes. Let's get on to some more golf stuff today. We were sort of discussing before we hit the record button, you know, should we touch on the Canadian Open, which, you know, now seems like a long time ago in the world of golf. Lots of stuff going on. This is Wednesday, June 12th while we're recording this. So when it comes out this weekend, the U.S. Open will be on. Canadian Open was great. And maybe it's because it's a senior moment. I'm trying to remember who won. Who won?
Robert McIntyre, the right. Scot, with his dad on the bag. Yeah,
that was a beautiful scene there at that 18th hole. Very sweet.
I don't know any other sport that makes me cry like golf.
Me too.
When Tiger won Masters in 2019 and the kids and his mom. Oh, my God. Just cry fest.
Yeah, you're making a good point. Like, there's no other sport. Like, when they win the Stanley Cup, they can't do it with their dad on the ice with them.
Yeah.
Like, it's so unique that way.
About 10 minutes later, then the kids and the wife and the, you know, dad come down to the benches and they do that. But knowing golf, it's always, you know, you have the camera, you know, the camera's on, you know, the wife and the, you know, or, you know, in ladies golf, it's, you know, the husband or boyfriend or something. You know, they're following them, you know, on the 18th hole. The best ever was when Corey Connors, as the Monday qualifier. Oh, yeah,
right. His wife, all the shots of his wife making and freaking out while it was happening was great.
Yeah, with that red silo cup that was just full of wine.
Yeah. But the other thing that's unique about golf is that, you know, yeah, a guy can win a tournament or whatever. A woman can win a tournament. Their partner's coming there on the green with him. But this kid's dad caddied for him.
Exactly. Like, as a, you know, kind of an emergency. Hey, Pops.
Yeah,
can you come and help me?
But so that's what's so unique about the game is that you can have your loved one.
Yeah.
Like, as participate in it. And I was like, you know, I was kind of following it along. I wasn't like totally invested in the Robert McIntyre story. But man, it really hit home with his father on the 18th green. And he had qualified for the memorial, which was last week, and said, I'm not going to go. I'm going to go home and be with my family and celebrate. And yeah, it's part of the things, I guess the thing we love about the game is that it gives, it provides those unique moments in sport.
Yeah, exactly. And kind of the more sort of traditional golf elements that we look at, it was his resiliency.
Yes.
I remember on, I watched most of the third round, and on that, so the third round front nine, he couldn't hit a fairway.
Yeah, he was leaking
oil.
He was
struggling big time. And I think that his, he just sort of, I think he and his dad had a little chat, little father-son thing, and he just settled down and just started to let it happen. So
yeah,
that was
a great
really,
back nine Saturday. He could have completely blown it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But he just kept his composure, and I think he just started to relax it into himself. I mean, he's struggled in the past. He's told, he said that he struggled with being lonely on tour.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the European, the DP Tour, he says they're much more of kind of like a gang that goes to dinner and hangs out and stuff. But on the PGA Tour, it's more like kind of lone wolves out there.
Yeah.
At least that's his experience. So to have his dad on the bag, you got to think how that settled. And obviously they have a wonderful, loving relationship. And that just settled him down and put him in a good place where he could just let it rip.
I saw something this morning, and I sent it to myself to play on the show in the under the category of resiliency. And unfortunately, it hasn't come yet. It's about a 50-second clip of John Rahm. Let's see if I can find it. Oh, there it is. I queued it for Swing Thoughts. Okay. So, because that's one of the things we learn about high-level players that I think more than anything, yeah, I shouldn't say more than anything. I mean, their talent is otherworldly. We've talked about that. And what I'm about to say, somebody who is a higher handicap golfer can go, yeah, easy for them because they hit it so good. But you know what? I'm glad you brought that up because it reminded me that they not only hit it so good, they're so good at compartmentalizing bad shots. And maybe speak a little bit about that, because that's something that the average player doesn't do. They spiral. They let bad shots affect them negatively, even if the bad shot isn't really their fault. Like, you know, because we all get breaks, good and bad, in this game.
Yeah.
But it's how you react to it is what separates. I think that's the, you know, yes, they're amazing athletes, but more than anything else beside athletics, that separates them from us.
Yeah, I think the key thing that they do is, A, they don't take it personally.
Yes.
When they hit a bad shot or get a bad break, it doesn't demean them, doesn't diminish them in any way. Oh, this happened. It doesn't mean they're going to act like saints and just accept it with, you know, equanimity and whatnot. No, they might slam a club first. But then they, again, to that second part, is it's how they respond. The average player just, you know, reacts, oh, this always happens to me, oh, shit. And, you know, they start looking, you know, through the Rolodex of swing thoughts or the story, oh, today's in the dumper, whatever. What they do is they know that it's just a matter, okay, that happened, now what?
Mm-hmm.
How do I respond? What's the best way for me to get out of this mess or to mitigate the damage? They respond well.
You know, I think playing golf professionally is available to everybody who plays golf, because you can play it in a professional manner. You don't have to, you know, we've talked about this a million times, about taking things personally. I mean, I used to. But you can be a professional amateur. You can play, you can deal with the game in a cool, detached, professional way. So this is Scottie Scheffler at his press conference for the U.S. Open. being asked by, there's this little kid who they was in the press room, and his name is Titus. I think he's been part of a bunch of tournaments now. They let him ask questions, but he asks a great question. But it's Scottie Scheffler's response. Now, again, keeping in mind the fact that he is otherworldly, even with the other guys, like, they, you know, one of the great questions, I feel bad for the, I heard a bunch of press conferences yesterday because I had an hour and 40 minute drive to a tournament. They're now asking other players the same questions people used to ask players about Tiger.
Exactly.
How do you explain Scottie Scheffler? What do you think of the run he's on? But here's Scottie Scheffler in his press conference talking about something that happened at the PGA Championship.
Hello, my name's Titus. Question I'd like to ask is last
week... Oh, I'm sorry. When he won the... No, I'm sorry. This is from the Memorial.
Speaking when you triple bogeyed that hole, you seemed to stay a little bit calm. How did you keep from getting frustrated from your bad shots?
So at the Memorial, he triple bogeys a hole, goes on to win it. And a great question, how did you keep from getting frustrated from your bad shots? To your point, listen.
It's a good question. I was very frustrated, so I'm glad you couldn't tell. But, you know, I think I've learned over the course of my career to stay as patient as possible. And when I made a triple on that hole, I really didn't hit that bad of a shot. It just hit a tree and went out of bounds. And, you know, I kind of reminded myself that I was playing good golf. And as long as I kept a good head on my shoulders, I could, you know, continue to kind of go about my day and was able to bounce back nicely. And I think that's something that you just learn playing more and more golf, that bad breaks are going to come. But it's more about your response to those things than, you know, really receiving the bad break. Just because, of course, of a 72-hole tournament, you're going to get plenty of bad breaks and hit plenty of bad shots. It's more about, you know, how I'm going to recover from those shots.
Isn't that great? And that, to what you just said, talk about a complete explanation of not taking what happened to him personally, number one. Yes, he got frustrated. Glad you couldn't see it, because inside he was pissed. Yep. But then he just reminded himself that I'm playing some good golf, and bad breaks are going to happen. End of story. So not personal, understanding the position you're in and not letting it inform the next three or four holes you play.
Right, right. Probably people will get sick to death of hearing, I mean, drinking game. Is Tim going to say the word awareness again? But when you have the awareness that, oh, I'm kind of pissed right now. This happened. And if I don't respond well, this could lead to a triple bogey or worse, or a quad or something. It's being aware of the situation and what's going on within you, maybe the story you're telling yourself, how, you know, you get a stranglehold on that, on your club, like you got white knuckles. And then what do you do then? It's about awareness. And once you have the awareness, then you can move forward. But most of what happens to most people, whether it's in golf or their life, is we're just in it. We're not aware of what's going on. We're just kind of in this trance of, you know, whatever we're thinking, that's the way the world is. Whatever we're perceiving, that's the way the world is. And it's not. It's all just kind of made up. And so we can choose how we're going to respond to all this stuff.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't mean it's all going to be sweetness and light. But we do have a choice. Otherwise, you're just a victim.
And that's what I meant when I said you can play golf professionally. You know,
yes.
You know, years ago, I don't know how many, but I remember I was playing in the Ontario Senior Am. So I guess I was a senior. So 50 plus, so somewhere. And I remember trying to make the cut. And on the second round, I was going along okay. And in the back nine, I made a quadruple bogey. Nine. I'm sorry. It was a par four. So whatever, a quintuple bogey. I made a nine. And I had four holes to go after that. And on the next hole was a par three. And I made a two on the par three. And I was so proud of the fact that my scorecard kind of went like, you know, 4-5, 5-4, 4-9, 2.
I remember that. I do. I remember that.
And I knew that was kind of when I kind of caught on to the fact that I could make a nine, and I was not happy about it, but I had to play the next hole, and my next swing, I had a kick in for birdie, because there was a time, not much before that, where I would have made a nine, then an eight, then a seven, and I would have finally calmed down around the last hole and gone, hey, too bad I just fucked myself for the last 40 minutes. Too bad I didn't calm down earlier. Who knows what I could have shot. and I ended up making the cut. But prior to that, that's what a lot of people do. You have a bad hole, Scotty Scheffler triple bogeys the hole. And I guarantee you, one of the most impressive stats about him, do you know that he leads in all sorts of strokes gain category approach, blah, blah, blah. But you know what he's the number one player in? Bounce back.
Wow.
Over 35% of the time that he makes a bogey, he follows it with a birdie. That's extraordinary. So that's the stat that we can all have in our lives, because we're all going to make a double or a triple from time to time. What's your score after that happens? Maybe it's not going to be a birdie, but you know, maybe it's a bogey. Maybe it's a good bogey after you make a double or a triple, or maybe it's a par. But that's what I mean about amateurs can play golf in a professional manner.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I love about that little statistic there, that's like the data that backs up what he told that kid.
Absolutely.
That's the data. And I love what you said. You can play golf professionally. And it's how you carry yourself. It's how you respond. It's how you interact with your playing partners. How you, you know, whether you, you know, you see a member of the maintenance crew and you say, hey, thanks, man. Course is in amazing shape. Yep. You know, you shake the hand of the club professional on your way out saying, great tournament, man. Way to go. You and your team did a wonderful job. Who do you want to show up as? The sulking, pouting little boy in short pants having a temper tantrum?
Yeah.
Or, as you say, in your big boy pants, being the person you really want to be. And the nice thing is that you're a nice person, but you also give yourself an opportunity to play your best golf when you're in a space where you're just, yeah, there's thunderclouds of stuff going on in terms of your thoughts, and maybe your swing's not in the slot, but just being aware that it's happening, you can kind of distance yourself and say, who do I really want to be?
And as a bonus, as you pointed out, as a little side bonus, it'll help you play better.
Exactly.
You know, one of the things in our friend Ken Osborne's book, which is, I'm not sure if it's available yet, but it's soon. He talks a lot about reacting to golf shots. And I think I mentioned this recently. And one of, you know, there's only a couple ways. So if you can react in a neutral manner to your poor shots and an exuberant manner to your good shots, That's just a much better way. I mean, I'll guarantee you, if you go and watch the video of Scotty Scheffler's triple, he barely reacts because they practice that. Whereas I think about, you know, myself and my shitty behavior over the years, and other people I've seen do this now.
That's be careful here. That's pre-enlightenment.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
before you're under the Bodhi tree and the TaylorMade hit you in the head.
Exactly. No, but I really did display, you know, baby-ish, infantile, shitty behavior that made me a worse golfer after it. You know, what you don't see, rarely see on the PGA Tour from professional golfers or any tour, is outward displays of emotion, because they know all the physiological detriment it does. They know that it spikes your cortisol. It takes X number of minutes for you to come down back to all of that. Because, and they, you know, yes, again, the caveat I always sort of say, oh, well, that's easy for them. They're great. Yeah, but listen, if you're an 85 shooter and you want to be an 80 shooter, and you're still pounding, you know, clubs and getting pissed off and blaming everything, well, that five shots is available to you just by not doing that. Or as you would say, not being immersed in your story of the day.
Yeah, exactly. I remember we had Carl Morris on, I think it was 2 years ago, and he had had some health issues, and he learned that he had blockage in his heart. Most of the the right description of it is coming to me, but he needed open heart surgery. He needed a quadruple bypass, and he just found that there's some complications that came out of it. It's been a tough slog for him the last couple of years, health wise. But he's got so much more gratitude for just being able to do what he does, interact with people, his loving partner. You know, just being able to participate in this game, and that just is is something that we can all draft off of, that sense of, you know, everything's actually okay and I feel good about it and thank you.
Yeah. I'll tell you the season of balance story in a second, but quickly, I played in an event yesterday. It's the Senior Ryder Cup. I've been part of this team for years, and you know, we have a good little team from Glencairn. It's a partner game. Better Ball is the format yesterday, and you know, I've been working on my golf swing, you know, like I do. It's one of my hobbies, and I would say overall I've been hitting it pretty good, pretty well the last 3 or 4 weeks. I've had a lot of decent scores, nothing really low, but lots of sort of average to a little bit above average scores. But yesterday in this event, I was warming up and I was hitting it great on the range. And then in the event, I'm laughing because I was the worst kind of guy to play in a match play format, because the two guys we played hit it spectacularly. Two great guys. Guys from Dundas Valley. One of them listens to the show. And I got to tell you, they all hit it great. And I was hitting it all over the place. Like, I was literally smother hooking my drive. Here's a perfect example. Smother hook my drive. These guys have got like 140 in. I'm 185 back, but I hit the green. Or another, just a horrible match play guy to be against. Another hole.
I see what you mean. Because
I was all over the place. I ended up shooting even par on the day. Like, I would have hated playing against me yesterday, because these guys were hitting it beautifully, great swings. I would like, this is an actual hole we played. They hit it down the middle. They've got like 145 into this par four. I'm 175 back in the trees. And I hit this high cutting 7-iron over the trees. It hits into the bunker, but it dribbles out. So now I got a chip. I chip up to about 8 feet, sink it. Those guys also make pars. Like, what the, you know, they, it was just bizarre. But I could feel early on in the round, like my irons have been great lately, and my short game has been spectacular. So Scheffler said, I knew that if I didn't dwell on how bad I was driving it, and I was, like, I'm not even kidding. There was a 305-yard par 5 where everyone was hitting 3 woods off the tee. And I hit 3 woods, and I goat-heeled it into these trees, and it just spit out. I had 195 to the green. That's how far I hit my 3. I had hit it 95 yards.
On a 300-yard hole.
On a 300-yard hole, I had 205 in. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
that's hilarious.
And I hit just enough good shots. Obviously, I made some birdies, but it was chaos with my full swing or my tee shots.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought, okay, I'm not going to figure it out. I was trying to do the best I could to get the ball in play. I barely ever did, but I knew that my irons were good and my approach has been fantastic. So I just kind of let it be. And it was, in the end, we beat these guys. It was a close match. Like, I think for the overall round, we beat them 2-1. So it was very close.
How many points did you get?
We got all the points.
6?
Yes.
Yipes. So, hey, folks, that means they won the front, they won the back, and the overall.
Woo! Yeah, it was crazy. So we got all the points. But if you had seen the four of us play, you would have thought that guy, me, shot 90. Like, I was just crazy, dude.
Well, it speaks to the season of balance, like you've been saying, and it fits right into what we've been talking about today. Is like, okay, as GSL says, that just happened. Now what are we gonna do?
By the way, it literally happened from the first tee shot. First tee shot, I was literally, these guys hit their great drives and they were like hitting 8-irons and such into the green. Both of them missed the green. I had 5-iron in. I hit it to 20 feet. Like, it was.
So what was, there had to be a couple of very good exchanges walking from a green to the next tee.
Well, no, I think it was, I was just embarrassed somehow. Some of the ways I was hitting it was embarrassing, but I just kept making par putts after par putts. And then I'd hit the odd good shot and make a birdie. And then I'd par 3, I made a birdie. On a par 5, I hit an okay drive, but I hit the green in 2. Like, it was just ridiculous.
Was it like those situations where you kind of walk off the green and you look at your partner, kind of hit your head down, and you just kind of look and roll your eyes and a little. It's not a massive, you know, slam.
Oh no, there were some quiet fist bumps. Very quiet.
It's just a little fist bump. Yeah, just you barely
just acknowledge quiet.
Because you don't want to make too much noise on those. Because the guys you're playing against are going like, what the fuck?
You just moved off the mic there for a second.
You say those no, guys are no, walking. No, I got you. We got you. Like,
here's the thing. I would tell you as a match play veteran. And I think these guys were, you know, good players. They probably played match play before. Just always expect that your partner, that those guys you're playing against, just always expect that they're going to sink putts.
Exactly. I remember Donko Jones, who won. It wasn't an official LPGA Tour event, but she won the match play championship, and that's what she told me. That's, you always expect your partner
chip like in. You said,
yeah, all that. They're gonna, you know, that they're gonna hit the hero shot out of the trees, and it's gonna roll onto the green towards tap in or something.
On the, I was just laughing at some of the places I put myself on the third last hole. It's 185 yard par three. These guys hit some good shots. One guy's at the back of the green. One guy's sort of at the front of the green. My partner's, I think he's on the green too. I'm short sighted. There's a bunker between me and the flag. It's about a 15 yard shot. I'm way out of position, and I'm on a little bit of, like, it's not hard pan exactly, but it's a shitty lie. I thought, okay, my partner's in good position. He's probably going to make par. So I'm like, I sort of opened my, it wasn't a super flop, but I sort of half flop shot it. It hits the flag. It's the flag, and it drops to 4 feet, and I make the par. Like, it was just bizarre. I had no business making par on that hole. Anyway.
Oh, that's funny.
So, do you have anything to add before we finish up? And I tell you the last bit of the Season of Balance story, because this next thing is
No, I think that,
like, I think we've had enough of me, but I got to tell you this story.
I think our great listeners can ascertain the key moral and lessons from that tale.
Anything you want to add on the program before I tell you this story?
Not really. I mean, I'm looking forward to
Pinehurst. Yeah, you talk about your experience as a Pinehurst. You've covered tournaments there, or did you play it?
I've played Pinehurst, and it's amazing in terms of, I mean, the ground, there's not much deviation in terms of what do they call it?
Elevation, I think, is the word.
Elevation changes. Elevation. Thank you.
My happy to help.
Helping the old fella out with his verbiage. So there's not a lot of great variation there, but the terrain, there's a lot of difference in terms of you know, how the ground rolls, the trees, the vegetation. It compared to the most parkland courses, it kind of looks like a mess.
Yeah,
you've got, like, it looks like there's kind of, like, what are weeds going in the bunker? Well, that's there for a reason. And so Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw remodeled it, and they made the greens less of a turtle back. So it was always kind of like a one note thing there, but now there's a lot more flow to the greens. But I was reading what Rory McIlroy had to say, and that it's way more interesting, because in the past U.S. Opens were, you know, you had these fairways that were about 10 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you hit the fairway, you're chopping out with a sand wedge, you know, 4-inch rough, where, you know, covers your ankles. Well, that's just not very exciting. But Pinehurst, they're always having to adapt to all kinds of different situations. And it just makes for more exciting, more golf, because the players have to be that much more creative.
I've never played it, but I was in the Pinehurst area in April. We played some other courses around there, but we went to Pinehurst for the afternoon, me and my buddy Grant, and we were going to play the saddle, I think it's called, the cradle. It's a 9-hole course, but it was packed. So they had this, I can't describe how large the putting green is there. Yeah, it's like thousands of feet, and, you know, there's all these people, and it's all kinds of crazy putts, kind of give you the flavor of Pinehurst, but the property itself is very interesting. And I said to him last night, I sent him a note. I said, hey, next time we go, we got to play this golf course, because it really does look like something, you know, that a golf nerd should get a chance to play. I know it's expensive, but maybe once in a, you know, one time.
It is a unique experience. Yeah, incredible golf course.
Okay, well, we're going to finish up with the final essay from GSL today. You know, I've been yammering on about the season of balance. And initially when I said that, you know, I like to come up with these things. You know, years ago it was Pathways to Par and all sorts of ridiculous crap that comes out of my mouth. But when I thought of it, I thought of it as a way of balancing golf versus doing non-golf things. Making sure I kept up with my yoga and continue to work out and, you know, see friends a little bit more, not just go from, you know, zero to nothing but golf for 4 or 5 months. And yes, there have been some weeks that are filled with events, like next week, like this week. But something happened last week, and I realized the season of balance isn't just about golf or non-golf, but it's also the kind of golf I want to play versus some other golf. And this I'll explain by saying. Mm-hmm. So last week, a week from today, I was playing men's night with a really couple good players, including Mike Dinner, who's a top amateur in the country, works for Golf Canada. And the reason I mention that is because he's a very seasoned tournament player. And I look down at my phone halfway through the round, and I get a note from the Golf Association of Ontario. Hey, Howard, great news, because I was first alternate into the Ontario match play. Great news, a spot's opened up. Let me know if you want it.
Hey, cool.
Exactly. And it would have been this week, June 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th. And right away I get excited. I'm like, oh, this is great, you know, because I did qualify on the day of the tournament, but I got retroed out because there was 5 spots and I was tied for 5th and I didn't get in because of my back 9. It's a dumb system, but that's how it works.
Yep.
So I'm talking to Mike about this and I say, well, you know, I start thinking about like all the things I'd have to cancel and all the... I had some things planned for this week. Monday, I was going to play golf with Kent, our friend, at Glen Abbey. He'd never played the Abbey before, and I was going to take him there for the first time. Yesterday, Tuesday, I had committed to playing for the Senior Ryder Cup team. Well, I'd have to change that. Thursday, I have a round with one of my best friends. Not a great golfer, but one of my best friends. We had planned. We had never get to play. We were going to play Thursday. I would have had to cancel that. And would have had to rearrange the Humble and Fred show and... And so during the round, I went back and forth about why would I not want to go into the Ontario Senior Match Play? Or why should I, or why not? And I sort of said to myself, and I was talking to Mike about this, I said, you know, really the only reason I'd go into it is egoic. It just sounds cool. It's like, hey, what'd you do last week? Oh, I was in the match play. You know, it's really just, but the actual nuts and bolts of going into it, I've done it before. I've qualified for events at this level before. So I said to him, if I'd never qualified before, I probably would have jumped at the opportunity and my friends would understand. But the season of balance came into play because I thought, you know, the kind of golf I want to play doesn't just include playing in a provincial championship. It includes playing with people I like to play with and honoring this commitment that I made to play yesterday and with another person I really enjoy playing with. So I said to the guy from Golf Ontario after a couple hours, I said, listen, man, I appreciate this. If you had given me, like, if I had qualified that day, obviously, I would have played. But I had a little bit more notice. I might have jumped at the opportunity, but thanks anyways, but give it to somebody else. And then I thought about it after. I thought, you know, that really is the season of balance. I balanced, you know, the kind of golf I want to play with being a, you know, fucking, you know, whatever, tournament nerd, you know, and playing in as many big tournaments as I can. Because really, in the end, who cares whether I played in that tournament or not? You don't. No one at the golf course I play at will care about it. The guys in it are all guys I played with a week ago and beat, you know, half of them. So it's not that. I mean, I've got my ego satisfied. So I don't know. That's what I decided to do. And then, you know, I felt great about it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I love that. There's all kinds of great stuff. But the one that sticks out for me is, I mean, there's a bunch of different, but the one that I just highlighted to me is you were going to maintain your commitment.
Yeah,
that's a big one, and Yeah, if you'd gone into the match play, I don't know any. I'm sure that, you know, let's say you and I had something, but anyway, hey, you know what? I'm an alternate. I got in. I would say, well, yeah, go for it. But at the end of the day, I think that it's, I don't know. I always think that we're accessing the best parts of ourselves when we're involved in things that are bigger than ourselves, you know, with other people. I know that sounds so lovely and sweetness and light, but I really do believe that, that when we're with others, and we're doing things, we're just hanging out or supporting them or just interacting, maybe building stuff, having fun together. That's I just find that there's greater rewards there. It's nice to win, you know, in golf. It's usually stroke play. It's individual, but when we're doing things with other people, I just think that in many ways there's greater rewards there.
Yeah, I agree, and I could have predicted you would like the honoring your commitment part, and but I, as you said, I could have called all those people, you, Kent, Bondi, my buddy Fraser. I could have called everyone last Wednesday and said, "Hey, I got into that tournament. You know, it's a big tournament, one of the biggest ones I would play in the year," and everyone would have been, "Hey, that's great, go do it."
Exactly.
But I would have missed out on the opportunity to play like I did yesterday, which was fun. Kent and I had a great time at Glen Abbey on Monday. Amazing. You'd never played it before. And seeing it through the eyes of somebody that's, you know, never seen the valley holes and, you know, the kind of guy he is, he's like you, just appreciated it all. And we had a great time, lots of laughs, played pretty decent, you know.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
You know, and the, all the history, yep, of the place, the Tiger Bunker, all that stuff. So what would I have gained from going to Tarrandawa near London and playing a practice round and, you know, maybe playing one match and gotten beat? And the whole week's gone because my ego was driving that decision. That's what I was trying to get away from, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's yet more data that backs up the season of balance.
That's right. The season of balance. Hashtag SOB. All right. Thanks as always to TaylorMade Golf. You got to try out the new TaylorMade TPX5. TP5X. It's true. It is half a club longer. Also, whoisoscarbravo.com. Also, secretlinks.golf. Tim O'Connor at o'connorgolf.ca. And, of course, Humble and Fred, wherever you find your podcast. Thanks, Timmy.
Thank you, man. And enjoy the U.S. Open.
Yeah, you too. And happy Father's Day.
Right back at you, you and your lovely daughters.
Thanks, my brother. You too. When you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside.